Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, you're in for a treat tonight. If you like hot combat, if you like cold steel going through Yankee bellies, you come to the right place. We got the Bitter Ender himself. He was out. He got in late last week, I think, because, you know, he barely made it in. He's going back to his old habits. We cannot keep him in swords. I tell you what, he's harder. We've got titanium swords. If we have a metal worker out there, a foundry that can, if you think you can come up with a, I don't know if you can, a sword that will stand up under the Bitter Ender. He's rough as hell on these swords. And it's running us broke, man. These swords, we have to buy them by the truckload. Anyway, how you doing tonight? Bitter Ender, did you get all that blood?
What in the world is going on here tonight?
Did you get that blood wiped off your sword, Bitter Ender? Are you okay now?
No. That's very intimidating to sling that thing around. So, now, I think we've got some good information for our listeners tonight. Nancy Hitt of Louisville, Kentucky, one of our greatest historians ever, and I were talking earlier in the week, and we wanted to explode some of the myths and lies that are dumped off on the South about our war for Southern independence. And so much of it is just basically propaganda. And we know that the minister of propaganda in Germany, Joseph Goebbels, said, a lie told once is always a lie, but a lie told 1,000 times becomes history. And that's exactly what's happened to the South. And we're blamed for everything that's wrong in this country, racism, white supremacist, you know, anything that comes down the road is always hung around the South's necks. But the problem is that the winners write the history books, and they get to spin their story on what happened, and the losing side never gets to tell their story. They always say that the winners are always right and the winners are always the good guys. And when I put on some of these presentations at these outdoor events, like at the Sam Davis Home in Smyrna or the Walk Back in Time that State Park has down there in Marshall County, a lot of times you get a little kid that doesn't know a lot about history. And well, older people don't know a lot about history either, about factual history. But I'll give them credit for being young and not having learned a lot about history. And they see the Union and the Confederate soldiers, and they always ask, well, who were the good guys? And I always point out, well, the boys in gray were the good guys. I mean, they were defending our home. And they haven't heard that before. So anyway, there's a British historian, and I didn't write down his name. But he said, if you want to know the truth of history in any war, read the history written by the losing side. Because the winning side will always tell you how great they were, and they were fighting the war to preserve the Union or end slavery or make the world safe for democracy, when actually they made the world safe for communism. But anyway, we won't get into World War II. So that's kind of what we would like to go through today or this evening. And I know Nancy has some information that she wants to pass on to you. And I would like to give just one snippet of the lies and misinformation that we have, and then we'll turn it over to Nancy and take on the biggest lie that they've always had, which is that the war was fought over slavery. And we've refuted that any number of times, but the one that really irritates me, having been in the military, is some of the big lies that they have. This is part one out of 56 of them. I don't know if we can get all 56 of the lies in today's program. It may take 3 or 4 weeks. But the one that really gets me is they say that Robert E. Lee, the commander of the Army of Northern Virginia, Robert E. Lee was a traitor. And they obviously show their ignorance that they don't know anything about military protocol. There's a difference between an officer and an enlisted man. And if you're in the military and you re-up as an enlisted man, you're committed to 3 years or 5 years or whatever you re-sign on for, or calling it re-upping. You re-up for that period of time, and you're required to serve that period of time. Now, an officer, it has a different standard that they go by. When I was in the Marine Corps and got commissioned, I had a 3-year commitment. And then after that, and I'm sure coming out of one of the military academies, it's probably 4 years, since that's a 4-year college type degree that you get. So say it's 3 or 4 years, whichever one it is. After that, you can serve 20 years or you can serve 6 months. Doesn't really matter. You're not required to serve mm-hmm. anything after you've completed that basic time. And then all an officer has to do is turn in his letter of resignation, and that's it. You're out. And so, first mm-hmm. of all, people that make that criticism don't know anything about the military. Number two, Robert E. Lee was not a citizen of the United States. When Virginia seceded and he resigned from the U.S. Army, he was not a citizen of the United States then. He was a citizen of a foreign country, another country. He was a citizen of Virginia, which then was a part of the Confederate States of America. Now, if he had stayed in the U.S. Army and Virginia had seceded and there was the Confederate States of America, and then Robert E. Lee, as an officer in the U.S. Army, was burning bridges or cutting down telegraph lines or doing anything like that, yes, that would have been a traitor. But he was not in the United States Army. He resigned from the U.S. Army. His service time was over. He was out. He was a citizen of Virginia, and then that's where he served his next 4 years, was as a citizen of Virginia, and first of all in the Army of Virginia, and then when Virginia was accepted into the Confederate States of America, then he was an officer in the Army of the Confederate States of America. And a lot of it has come out of that. Of course, we know that Colonel Robert E. Lee was offered command of all the United States forces. I mean, every Yankee soldier from Maine to California would have been under Lee's command. And that was authorized mm-hmm. by President Lincoln, by the Secretary of War, by Winfield Scott. And Lee turned it down. He told them, "I cannot draw my sword against my family," which meant he would have to fight against Virginia and his family in Virginia. And it infuriated the Yankee hierarchy so much that when the Lees left Arlington, their home, that he had inherited from his father-in-law, when they left Arlington, never to return, they decided that as a petty little stunt that they were going to pull, they would turn the grounds around Arlington House, there on that hill overlooking the Potomac River and looking right down into Washington, D.C., they would turn the grounds around Arlington House into a cemetery. And they even bragged mm-hmm. about putting the graves as close to the house as possible so no one would ever want to live in that house again. And the Lees never came back there. Now, many years after the war, his sons sued the government. General Lee had passed away, but his sons filed suit against the government to be reimbursed for the value of the home. They got part of it back, not the total value. But that's one reason, as a military veteran, I could be buried at Arlington for free, but I would not want to be buried there, because to me that's an insult to General Lee.
Right.
I can pay for a plot, or they can take me and throw me out in the woods somewhere, but I would not want to be buried at Arlington. And now they're trying to get rid of the statue that's there, the Confederate statue at Arlington Cemetery. It's known as the Reconciliation Statue. And it was put up mm-hmm. in 1914 as a symbol that the South and North had come back together, because Southern soldiers, and many of them were former Confederate soldiers, had volunteered for the U.S. Army to fight in 1898 in the war against Spain. In fact, Joseph Wheeler was a general in the Confederate Army. He wound up as a U.S. general in the war against Spain. And I don't know if it actually happened mm-hmm. or not, but he was one of the officers in charge of that charge up San Juan Hill, although Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders got all the credit for it. But supposedly when they launched that attack, he said, "Come on, boys, let's go get those Yankees. I mean Spaniards." So anyway, but he did. I mean, he served in that war. So that was, and the dedication was by President Woodrow Wilson. And that was a symbol of the country being reunited. And now they want to tear it down, and they want to dig up those graves of those Confederate soldiers that are buried around there. So I'm assuming that the government in Washington does not want to reconciliate. They don't want the country back together, which, in my opinion, is great. We don't want to be back either. We don't want to be in your country in 1861. We don't want to be in it in 2023 either. You don't want to reconciliate?
Right.
Fine. Take
That's
off.
Right.
You know,
right.
You rich bastards north of Richmond or whatever the title of the song is, you go your way and we'll go our way and never see each other again. So anyway, that's my little tirade about Lee was a traitor that I always try to set that straight. And a lot of the other nonsense that we hear is about that the war was fought over slavery, but actually both presidents, Jefferson Davis and Abraham Lincoln, said it wasn't. Jefferson Davis said, we're fighting for our independence. We seek no conquest nor aggrandizement. All that we ask is that we be left alone. That's a pretty simple request, but that wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. And Lincoln said, the war is not about slavery. I want to preserve the Union. But actually, mm-hmm. it wasn't about slavery or preserving the Union. It's about money. Because we have a hard time understanding this today, but in the late 1850s and early 1860s, South had the money because the South had cotton. And back then, cotton was what oil is today. If you had cotton, you were mm-hmm. Qatar and the United Arab Republics and so forth because of the money that cotton made.
Y'all, we're going to go to a quick break. When we come back, we have a super surprise. Miss Lee McMichaels will be calling in for just for a second.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, we'll back out then.
Fantastic.
We'll be right back, folks.
This is a battle between truth and deceit. A battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpochTimes.com.
Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Looking for an IT partner that truly understands your needs? Managed IT Services is the answer. We meet with you regularly to discuss your goals and form a tailored technology plan. Our customers have called us a trusted advisor who delivers. When it comes to IT, we do it all. Firewalls, cloud storage, server migration, and more. Say goodbye to long-term contracts and hello to a team that earns your business month after month. Call 801-706-6980 now and let Managed IT Services transform your IT experience.
The Innis is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Dear Blood River Radio audience, we call Mrs. Lee McMichaels during the break, and she has agreed to come on, and she's been through hell, as you can imagine, but I'm going to shut up. Miss Lee McMichaels is going to give us an update on her husband and son who were wrongfully imprisoned. You can tell them a quick story if you don't mind, Miss Lee. And please don't forget to tell them how we can contribute money to their defense, their legal defense funds and down there. Anything you want to say, Miss McMichaels, what an honor to have you on. We are at your Blood River Radio. We are at your service, dear. So go ahead. The airtime is yours.
Thank you, Eddie. I put up an update on our website. It's at mcmichaeltrial.com, and it will tell you basically what we've been through for the past 3, going on 4 years now. Both my guys have been, of course, transported to big boy prison. Greg is in Augusta Medical because of his health conditions. Travis is on the Tennessee border. He's at Hayes State Prison in Tryon, Georgia, which is 30 miles south of Chattanooga, Tennessee. So it's a 7-hour drive to see Travis, and I did it one day about 2 months ago, and it daggum near killed me. So I'm trying to plan on going to see him in October, and I'm going to take a two-day trip to do it. Greg is a 3-hour drive from here, and I try to see him once a month because of work. I'm working full-time, of course, and I work every Saturday to make the little extra income. And so I can take a day off during the week to go see him when I need to. But I saw Greg last week, and he's doing better than he was. We're waiting on the appeal for the state of Georgia, of course, and they just finished the transcripts from the court trial. And I believe that we have a lawyer for Travis. With all the donations that we got, I'm putting down a pretty good size retainer next week, which will take most of that money, but I still have a little bit left because this is going to be a long battle.
Yes.
But thank God for the supporters I have out there and the people that are praying and thinking and sending money. They're donating to our Give Send Go account. And it's under, I think it's the legal fund for Greg and Travis McMichael under Give Send and Go. And I use that money exclusively to pay legal fees for these guys. So we had state lawyers for both appointed state lawyers, and I think one of them had only been doing this for like 9 months. I mean, that's the travesty is I don't know them, and most lawyers think they deserve what they got from what I understand, but I don't know. But this man that has stepped up and said he contacted me, he has a passion for this trial. He sees the injustice of it all, and he wants to represent Greg or Travis. Greg and I sat down and talked about it, and due to Greg's age, we just decided that Travis would be the one that would benefit from a paid lawyer. So we were in the process of getting that taken care of so he can have some good representation during the appeal process, which I hope starts soon. I don't know. It's going to take a while from what I understand. But they're both hanging in there. Travis is doing much better than Greg. They've been in solitary confinement now for 3 years. They're not allowed to go outside. They're not allowed to go out of their cells. I can only hear from them once a week because they can't get to a phone. They have to lock the prison down for them to go out because they have so many death threats against them, and they would be killed if they get out into the exercise place. They definitely would not do well for them. So they are in solitary confinement for their safety. Neither one of them can come out of their cells. They've seen 6x6 for 3 years now. Travis can get the special permission to get reading material, and he gets it. They both got a TV. And Greg I sent him a Wall Street Journal for about 4 months, and he never received one paper. So I'm in the process of trying to reorder that, get that situated so at least we can get him something to read, and books. You know, he's having difficulty getting books, but I'm thinking that may be Greg's thought process in trying to get them. I don't know. You know, there are prison rules, and everything's a process. So they've both lost a tremendous amount of weight, of course, because of the food. And you know, every week I send them money for the commissary. I put it in their account for commissary. So that's our life. But Travis is at least keeping his head up, and he's got a great sense of humor. And I talked to both of them yesterday, and he is he talks to his son as much as he can. He's taken up sketching and drawing, and he draws these little silly characters, cartoon characters and animals, and he sends them to Everett about two or three times a week, and Everett is just loves it. He loves it. He loves talking to his daddy. He misses his daddy. He remembers his daddy, which is good. And I get to see Everett all the time, so that's good too. And he just turned 7. He was 3 years old when Travis was taken in front of him, and that's the last he saw his daddy. But he's turned 7 this week, and he's grown up to be a fine young man. We're all proud of him. So we just live day by day, pray every day. Travis and Greg both are maintaining their faith and still in their Bibles, and that's all we can do for right now. I have hope that the appeals will turn this around.
I hope and pray. I hope and pray too.
I think that the culture and I think the pendulum's starting to swing the other way. I don't know, but this was very unjust. Race had nothing to do with this, none whatsoever. I still don't understand how it was made into a racial issue, but it is what it is. So that's all I can tell y'all. We just keep on.
Thank you. And please give that.
Michael, could you give us that address again to where we could send money, please, ma'am?
Yes.
Thank you,
Gene.
So people could write it down.
And do it slow, too.
Give, G-I-V-E, send, S-E-N-D, go, G-O. It's like a GoFundMe account, but GoFundMe shut us down immediately. So we started the gifts. Yeah, they threw us off before we even got it going.
That is incredible. That is beyond hate.
Yeah, it is. But anyway, Give, Send, Go is a Christian-based, and they don't look at, they're the ones that also supported all the January 6th rioters or whatever they were, protesters. They support them. They came up and somebody could put an account, Gifts and Go, on their website. And they couldn't do a GoFundMe for them either. But anyway.
But we don't have any censorship in this country. There's no censorship
not
in this
all.
Country.
Not at all.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where you came up with that. Anyway.
I watch CNN. That's where I came up with it. No.
Well,
I don't do that. Crazy.
That's kind of crazy because that's the only thing that Greg's TV is, he can't get Fox or he can't get any conservative channels on his TV. Isn't that interesting? Travis can get everything. Travis can get Fox, and Greg is so sick of the CNN and MSNBC, and he says that all I hear about is Trump. He says, is there anything else going on out there? He has to get his news from me. But that's why he wants a Wall Street Journal. But anyway, so yes, Give, Send, Go, and it's Mike, Greg, and Travis, or maybe Travis or Greg, Michael Legal Fund. But there's a bunch of them in there. So, and the website, the web page is McMichaelTrial.com, and it tells the whole story of what happened. And we even put the last little bit up. I guess first of the summer. It was the trial itself. Some of the unanswered questions that are pretty interesting. So, and we will be putting the transcripts from the trial up shortly, in a few months, when we get them all complete.
Do you still communicate with Lee Wilson?
I'm sorry,
Miss Lee. I meant to. Is Lee Wilson? Is he still working with you?
He is my right-hand man.
Oh, great, great. Tell him I said hi. And you tell him, and the news for you and Lee, you can call me anytime, day or night, 24 hours a day. You have my phone number. And thank you for coming on. And we all pray here that we can get those guys out of jail. Thank you so much, Miss Lee. You call
thank
me anytime, day or night.
The land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Jeremy Scott. The White House is calling on Congress to avoid a government shutdown by passing funding legislation.
House Republicans failed multiple times this week to do their basic duty, keep the government running. Instead, they were pushed to the extremes with increasingly severe cuts to programs Americans rely on.
Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre is urging House Republicans to honor the bipartisan agreement negotiated by Speaker McCarthy and President Biden. Congress must pass a funding bill by the end of the month to avert a shutdown. Democratic Senator Bob Menendez and his wife are charged with federal bribery.
Prosecutors claim he received substantial bribes to influence and protect businessmen and the Egyptian government. U.S. Attorney Damian Williams says an FBI raid of their home turned up a lot of cash.
They discovered approximately $500,000 of cash stuffed into envelopes and closets. Some of the cash was stuffed in the senator's jacket pockets.
The bribes allegedly covered a mortgage, a luxury vehicle, and a no-show job. Menendez also accused of sharing sensitive U.S. government information with Egyptian officials. He's dismissing the charges as a smear campaign. Menendez is confident the issue will be resolved successfully. I'm John Schaefer.
Tropical storm Ophelia made landfall this morning in North Carolina with heavy rain and winds of 70 miles per hour. Ophelia is forecast to bring strong winds, heavy rain, and flooding from the Carolinas to southern New England. A house in New Jersey exploded last night, sending five people to the hospital. The house in West Milford suffered heavy damage. This neighbor tells PIX 11 News about the destruction.
There's nothing left. I mean, it's completely level right to the foundation. Parts of it laying all over the roof, glass, debris, like two blocks down on top of one guy's house.
The cause of the explosion is under investigation. This is USA News.
With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Kind of like choosing Derek Jeter as the pinch hitter for your baseball team.
Jeter, you're in. We need a home run.
I'll give it a try. I've swung a bat once or twice.
That's out of here.
Yep, even easier than that. With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, is it even a decision? That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One and a member FDIC.
Welcome to the Continental.
From the world of John Wick comes a Peacock original three-part event that takes us back to 1970s New York. The Continental.
This institution wields power beyond your imagination.
Let's take this house and everything that comes with it.
The Continental, from the world of John Wick. Streaming now.
And away we go.
Only on Peacock.
Dear Blood River Radio audience, I hope that got to your heart, having Miss Lee McMichael come on. It gets to my heart. You know, she used to come on all the time. We quit calling her because she was so distraught, so upset. She said she wasn't going to do any more radio interviews for a long time because, I mean, can you imagine being that upset? But I will say that I'd like to toot the horn for Blood River Radio. When we called her, I was really surprised we were able to get in touch with her. Mr. Buddy was one of the movers and shakers, so let's get lined up. But did you know, I'll toot our horn, Blood River Radio is the only media, the only radio show she will ever come on. She didn't trust anybody else. Now, we did get her, and I'll say this too. We got to contact her. If we contacted Miss Lee first to see if she would like to do an interview with America Free Press. She said she would. And I asked her, did she mind if we gave her phone number to John Friend, who is a writer for the American Free Press. So we take a little pride. We take a lot of pride here in Blood River Radio. Me, all the crew, we set that up. Blood River Radio was instrumental in getting John Friend the contact and get that interview with American Free Press. I mean, you got to get what little credit you can get, because we like the donors and listeners to know what good work we do. And if you tune in here every week, you know we do every best we can. And if you listen to people like the Bitter Ender and the Bell Cow Nancy and Sister Monica Schaefer and Rand, I think you know what colors the color of our flag without even having to look at it. But anyway, we're going right back to the Bitter Ender because he was kind of shortchanged last week, and he's supposed to be carrying the load this week. So we're going to work him He's like they used to say when I used to go to church. They said, Sunday school teacher told me when they find a horse at a run in church, he said it's really hard to find a horse at a run in church. But if you find a horse at a run, he said they'll run him into the dirt. That means when they find somebody that'll work in the church. But anyway, Bitter Ender, go back and get on back on that horse, son, and get that new short out.
For getting that set up, Eddie. Thank you for getting that set up. And that was amazing that you could call her and get her on that quickly. And you know how it pains me to no end to give you a compliment, but sometimes I have to. The truth has to be brought out. So,
yes.
No, congratulations. That was great.
I know we take
there.
A pride.
I'm glad you did.
You, Gene, you're part of this thing as much as I am, Sister Nancy. I hope y'all take as much pride in what we can do as I do. I'm just bushed with pride. And I don't want to forget.
Well, there's no other way we can get the truth out to people. That we have so much censorship in this country. And it's government censorship, and they put the pressure on all of these IT places that you think you could get news. And as soon as somebody comes out and disagrees with the dictatorship in Washington, then all these internet sites just chop them off. And like she said, GoFundMe canceled them. Banks will cancel you. And, like I was being sarcastic with her. Oh, no, we don't have censorship in this country. The heck we don't. This is the Soviet Union. And people might as well realize that the government just clamps down on anything and anybody that disagrees with them, even a former president. They're going to keep him battling in the courts till, 2095 or something like that. So it's a disgusting situation. And that goes right back to what we were talking about in the first segment about this war for Southern independence. And the lies and misinformation about that had been passed down from one generation to another, that now you have two or three generations of Americans that never talked to the veterans that actually served and never talked to the people that were in the Confederate government or in the Confederate military that can give you the straight information about why they left their homes and left their families to defend their state when their state was going to be invaded. And that's just a very simple thing. I mean, it's such a foolish concept to degrade the Southerners for fighting to defend their homes. And I was on Dan Meredith's TV show here in Nashville, Heartland Liberty, and I'd like to recommend that to our listeners. You can get it on Rumble, or you can go to heartlandliberty.com and go through the archives of some of those programs. And Dan has always a very conservative program. We brought up that slavery issue last Wednesday night on there. And that's what we were talking about. And he was saying that, he gave a good analogy. If the Russians invaded this country, who would not fight to protect your home, or the Chinese communists or the North Koreans or whoever, pick out whoever you want. And if you would be termed by them as a traitor if you fought against them for invading your country and destroying your home. But that's exactly what the Southerners were doing. Their country was invaded. People were robbing and looting their homes, attacking their wives and their daughters, and they fought to defend their homeland. And I think that was probably one of the most noble causes anywhere to try to do something like that. You wouldn't immediately go over to the invaders and say, oh, well, we were bad. We're going to side with you. And here's a list of my neighbors. Go get them. So anyway, that's what it was about. We were talking about slavery, and that both presidents said it wasn't about slavery. It was about money. And Nancy brought up a good point. Back then, we didn't have property tax or income tax or things like that. The money that the federal government had came in from tariffs or taxes on imported goods. But the South, being an agricultural region, was paying far and above more than any other region of the country. And I've seen this in several articles. And the amount that they took to run the federal government back in 1860, according to 1860, was about $103 million. For everything in the federal government. We had a much smaller government. Now, people laugh at that today. They blow off $103 million just at lunchtime in Washington now. But back then, that was a lot of money. But the South, out of that $103 million, was paying $82 million because of taxes on agricultural goods and tariffs on imported goods. And Lincoln himself said that the seven states that seceded, the original seven in the Confederate States of America, he said they could stay out of the Union. They could keep their slaves, if that was important, which it wasn't, but that's what he said. They could stay out of the Union, they could keep their slaves, if they would pay their taxes to the United States. Now, that's a foolish thing. Here's a foreign country, the Confederate States of America, is supposed to pay taxes to another foreign country, the United States of America. It would be like, and of course, the big issue blew up in Charleston Harbor over the federal troops that were moved out to Fort Sumter, which was under construction. They kicked out the construction crew and put the federal troops in there from Fort Moultrie over on the other side of the harbor, which effectively blocked Charleston. It blocked the channel coming into Charleston. So today that would be like, say, the Chinese communists put a missile battery at the Verrazano Narrows in New York coming into New York Harbor. And they said, yeah, ships can come into New York, but they're going to have to stop at the Verrazano Narrows there, and they're going to have to pay a tax to Communist China before that ship from anywhere in the world can get into the harbor in New York. Now, how long do you think this country would stand for that? But that was a situation that the South faced with the federal troops at Fort Sumter. And they argue back and forth, well, this was all about slavery and so forth and so on. And then after the war, the white Southerners treated the slaves so badly. The blacks weren't high on the Christmas card list in the North either. they wanted
I don't think
the
so.
Abolitionists. No, the abolitionists wanted to end slavery, but they sure did not want blacks in the North. And the first Jim Crow laws were passed in the northern states to keep the races separate. And I think Nancy had some information about why they were so adamant about keeping the blacks away from the whites in the North. So go right ahead, Nancy.
Let me ask y'all a quick question before you go to Nancy.
Go ahead.
Let me ask you a quick question. Anyone of y'all can answer it now. Is it true that the Yankee, one of their hero generals, was fighting Joe Hooker? Did he say if he'd have known that freeing the slaves was going to be a big part of the war, that he would have never fought? Or am I just dreaming that up? Did anybody know anything about that?
That's what the Yankees said.
I'll have to look it up. I don't know if it was Hooker. It may have actually been Grant that said that because his wife had three slaves. She kept them during the war. And after Lincoln had his little Emancipation Proclamation, which didn't free any slaves, as we all know, it only applied to those states in rebellion against the Union, which was the Confederate states. He had no power there. And the five states in the North that stayed in the U.S., there were five states that slavery was legal, and it didn't apply to them. It was only in those states. But, yeah, so a newspaper reporter asked Ms. Grant, said, well, your husband is supposedly fighting to free the slaves, and yet you've got three slaves. How do you explain that? And her reasoning was, well, good help is so hard to find. So how can you argue with logic like that?
Well, at least we got Mexicans.
I think they kept their slaves after the war.
Yeah, folks, we gotta go to a quick break.
Be right back, folks. Slaves after the war.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Okay, listen up, people. I'm beating the bushes for a few good men. I don't want you boys the alt-right. I want the hardcore of the hard-right. And I need you front and center, boots on the ground, at a minute's notice, in the streets, and I need your money. You know the problem that the whites of the world face. It's the all-too-real threat of global extermination. And you know what's going on in South Africa and Western Europe. And unless you're semi-comatose, you've already seen the first stages of white genocide unfolding in our country. Our culture is under constant full-scale attack by our enemy. The enemy never sleeps. They spend day and night wrecking the monuments and the graves of our beloved kin. They attack us physically everywhere we go. They've already taken the linen and our stone. Now they're coming after our flesh. And if you're not too squeamish, if you want to be part of the number one white advocacy group and the number one white civil defense group in the United States, then contact Eddie Bombardier Miller at BloodRiverRadio.com. And please, please donate. And God knows you need us as much as we need you. Thank you.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Dear Blood River Radio family, thank you so much for hanging on. It's been pretty emotional program tonight with Miss Lee McMichaels calling in. Also, we'd like to point out something else before we go to the bell cow. Miss Lee McMichaels noted that they got kicked off of GoFundMe. Upstanding people, her son was honorably discharged from the Coast Guard. He served with honors, highly trained. The dad was a career police officer, never had any crimes at all. They get kicked off of GoFundMe, but yet the DeAndre Harris, that black feral animal in Charlottesville, who hit a man, an elderly man, almost as old as me, hit him in the back of the head with a mag light, right upside the head. I remember Gene said hit him right around the temple. It was either Bitter Ender or the Bearded Wonder told me that. Hit him in the temple, which is one of the most deadly places to hit somebody. And
hit him from behind. So they thought he came up from behind. Yeah.
And yet he gets a GoFundMe page, Gene. He could have it and raked in thousands of dollars. Yet, but we had a white person who defended himself from a serial felon. He can't have one. Anyway, back to you, Sister Nancy.
Yeah, I'm just going to point out a couple things. We were talking about Jim Crow laws. Let me say this, that the North had what they call black laws, and those black laws preceded the war, and what they did was they were written purposely to keep blacks from settling in northern states. One of the misleading things that people also don't understand is slavery existed in the North, and one of the reasons that many of the soldiers who were fighting for the so-called Union were never told until very late in the war that this was a war to emancipate blacks is because they well knew, the soldiers who lived in the North knew that there was slavery in the North, and they were not ready to fight to free slaves in the North. So that was kind of hidden. In fact, I have a distant ancestor who started out on the wrong side as a Yankee, and when they decided that the Emancipation Proclamation, which meant nothing, I found that out when I was reading Sandburg's volume. I only read the section when it talked about Abraham Lincoln during the war, and discovered that the Emancipation Proclamation, as it was originally written, freed no slaves at all in the North. It only freed those that were so-called in a land that they could not free, which was occupied southern territories that the Yankees had occupied militarily. My distant ancestor, at that point when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued, he and many officers defected and came out of the Union service, because they thought that they were fighting for Union as opposed to the freeing of slaves. That he was a Kentuckian. But another thing I wanted that Gene and I talked about, and it's you can find it in the current issue of the Barnes Review. You'll see a photograph of different types of races. You'll see a black couple that have these gigantic welts on their forehead. Well, you go around and look at different Confederate museums, you're inevitably going to find a picture of this black so-called slave who's probably, they're trying to imply that this black was brutally beaten on his back, and you'll see these pictures of these whelps on the back of this black slave, or maybe former slave. And I call that scarification. The Africans did scar themselves. It was done on purpose. I'm going to say that this photograph that they tried to pass off as a brutal beating from an overseer or a white supremacist was done as a type of African scarification, which included incisions or burning, and then the deferring of healing. In other words, no attempt to heal those incisions so that they became obvious whelps on the skin. So that's just my take on that African that they're always trying to blame on us as being a victim of a beating. And if you look at the Barnes Review, you'll see a couple of a black couple that have their scarification is on their face. But the tribal people in Africa, they did this on purpose. And Gene and I were talking about something that I received an email today, which was quite interesting. It's really about black characteristics. And it was written by various people who actually lived among the blacks in the past and present. But the title was called Black People and Morality. And it just kind of sums up what we're facing today. A British explorer said an average English laborer would accomplish more per day than 12 Africans. A German professor found Africans indolent, careless, inattentive, and unpunctual. The first white man at Lake Victoria, that's actually in Rhodesia, he was amazed at their inherent laziness. In 2022, a British person wrote that Africans were more late for work and didn't do much when they arrived, always on their cell phones. So nothing new here. And another one at a daycare said they had a complete lack of haste under any circumstances. I guess if somebody's dying, they're still probably very slowly responding. An American said that any black person he worked with had done his best to get paid for doing nothing. And old explorers found Africans stole compulsively, and that is one of their main traits. Of course, you know, an African you might think he's a pretty good guy, maybe you like him, but that's not going to stop him from stealing from you. And today, looting is a more or less exclusively black pastime. And one of the reasons that we have a hard time dealing with these people is within the language of the Zulus. Probably had they had a language. None of these Africans had written languages. They had no word for obligation. They had no word for gratitude. I mean, they had no feeling for appreciation for anything that's done to them. Well, doesn't that fit today? I mean, with all the handouts are getting, they're still complaining. John Duncan found the Africans cared very little about animals, and the explorer Richard Lander wrote that Africans have no affection for their own children. They'll sell them, give them away, whatever, anything. So this is what we're dealing with. The characteristics seem to have followed them into this country. And I'll leave it at that, Gene.
No, that's all you have to do is watch the news. You know, these smash and grab things that are going on, they see nothing wrong with that. They feel like they have a right to destroy these high dollar stores in Chicago and all over the country, and San Francisco and Los Angeles, and just take whatever they want. And that's why so many, you mentioned this, so many of the northern white soldiers literally threw down their rifles and walked off and left the army mm-hmm. when they found out about Lincoln's emancipation. They said, you know, mm-hmm. we didn't sign up to get killed for a bunch of the N word. we're not about to do that. And even the white officers had contempt for the blacks. Somebody asked Sherman one time when they decided finally they're going to take blacks into the U.S. Army, the Yankee Army, because they couldn't get white Northerners to re-up or, you know, they were dodging the draft. Mm-hmm. And so they had to resort to bringing over the Irish, the Germans, and using the blacks. And somebody asked Sherman, and this is his words, not mine, they asked him if the Negro could serve as well as a white man. And Sherman said, well, a nigger can stop a bullet as good as a white man, but a sandbag is better. And that was Sherman's quote. And I know you can't use that word today, but I didn't. He did. I'm just reporting on what he said.
That's right.
And he had nothing but contempt for him. So they didn't want him in the U.S. Army. And they got paid less than the white soldiers, about $2 a month less than the white northern soldiers got. And so, you know, it wasn't the picture we get on PBS of all the blacks and white northern soldiers were holding hands and singing Kumbaya as they marched through the South and stole everything they'd get their hands on. Well, you know, one of the things that caused the disaster for the Yankee soldiers at Fort Pillow over in West Tennessee, white officers had the command at Fort Pillow was about half white and half black. And the white officers at Fort Pillow had given the blacks whiskey to boost their courage and get them fired up, mm-hmm, because they knew, mm-hmm, Forrest's men were out there. And they knew from past experience or past stories that they were facing a tough battle coming up there at Fort Pillow. And Forrest gave them a chance to surrender. He wasn't, mm-hmm, going in there to, mm-hmm, wipe the fort out. He was trying to save blood on both sides. But when he sent in a flag of truce and tried to talk them into surrendering, these drunk blacks were up on the wall, the earthworks of that Fort Pillow, hollering at the Confederates out there and making all sorts, right, of obscene gestures. And this was not a really good idea, because this was in the days before the, huh, NFL and the NBA, and trash talk did not go over real well back then.
I don't think it did.
The Confederates came over the wall and were driving them out of the fort and over that bluff and down to the river there, to the Mississippi River, they found all these barrels of whiskey along the wall, and they used gourds for dippers, you know, to dip out the whiskey and give it to them. And that's why so many more of the blacks were killed at Fort Pillow than the white U.S. soldiers were. The white ones had enough sense. When they got driven out of the earthworks and over that bluff and down to the river road, they had enough sense to surrender, because now you had Confederates coming down that river road from the north to the south and coming up from the south to the north. And then the other group was standing up on top of the bluff, shooting right down straight on top of them. So most of them surrendered, but the blacks had been pumped up with all that liquor. They were still fighting, and a lot of them jumped in the river in the Mississippi and drowned or were shot trying to swim away. So you see, that's what happens when there is no control over this group of people. And you throw in alcohol, and it's a disaster. And that's, mm-hmm, what we face today, really, in this country, is they have these no bail laws put in place, and blacks, right, have taken over these cities as district attorneys and mayors and chiefs of police, and they've made our cities unlivable. People have to get out of them. That's why so many people are fleeing California and Michigan and New York and coming down here to get away from the cities in the north. And unfortunately, they're ruining the cities here too, like Memphis and Jackson and Birmingham and Atlanta. And it's like a plague that's been put on us. And so anyway,
you look like we come to the end of the
hour. That's
the
good news for this week.
Yep. You know, and right quickly, the fact checker sent in, he said the Herald was hit twice. He was hit behind from the back with a white Antifa guy named Durag. And Gene, you were right there. Matthew Goodwin, the guy who's with us up there, he was tending to Harold Cruz when Harold got hit the second time. People, thank you so much for tuning in tonight. It's been emotional, been great. I think we filled it from wall to wall. And thanks to people like the Bitter Ender and the Bell Cow and Braveheart. And we'll have to get a nickname for Mark Tomey. But good night, everybody. Good night, Gene and Nancy and Miss Lizzie, who makes this show run so good. Good night, Blood Group Radio family, and thank you so much. Good night, everybody.